This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, we got the good, the bad, and the dumb coming up in hour number two. Hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. All right, the Tampa Bay Rays are now off to a 10-0 start. They beat the Red Sox 1-0 last night at Tropicana Field. All right, 10-0 in a 162-game season. It's worthy of your time and attention. It's worthy of you going, wow, that's something you need. I know it doesn't mean much. Still a long way to go. But it also means that if you are in that position of the Rays where, look, winning gets contagious. If you keep winning more than you lose, you end up having a historic season, right? You are going to lose 52 games, right? What was that old saying that Sparky Anderson used to say? Like, you win 50, you lose 50. It's what you do in the other 50 that matter, right? Back then, you know, when it was 154-game season. That was the old saying, right? Everybody knows that in baseball, and here's the thing. That is actually a good analogy for life, right? Whatever you do, whatever project you're on, whatever business that you're in, if you open a custard stand, right, you know that there are people that will buy your custard. There will be people that will never buy your custard. And then what you do with the middle group, how large that is, right? It's the same thing with television shows. There will be people who will watch religiously. There'll be stuff people will never watch. And then what do you do with the group that's sort of in the middle? And that's the way baseball is, right? And it's not like any sport, because in basketball, we really don't have that saying. We don't really have that saying in football. And we don't really have that saying in hockey. We don't really have a number that says you win some, you lose some, right? In the NFL, it's like if every team went, well, you know, it's a 17-game season. You know, if you everybody wins six, you lose six. And what's what you do with the other five? And it's like, no, some teams win 14 out of 17 games, right? And in this case, it pretty much holds true, right? I mean, your best season, you still lose around 50 games. The juggernauts of the sport, you still lose about 50 games. But so no one is already saying, you know, look, like no one thinks the Rays are going to win 130 baseball games, right? That's no one's saying that. But it goes to show a couple of things here. One, that it forces teams that are on low payrolls to answer to their fan base as to why they're not as successful. It's easy when you're the Yankees or the Dodgers or the Red Sox or whoever, and you're paying big money and big salaries. Mets is another example. When you're paying big money and big salaries and you're willing to go after free agents, you're willing to sign a Justin Verlander in free agency, or you're willing to pick up a Giancarlo Stanton contract or whatever it may be, or pick up Mookie Betts or whatever it may be that these larger teams do. But it is another thing to work within a very limited payroll and find success within the guidelines of your own economics. And so if you are a franchise that hasn't been able to find the rhythm of that, right, then you owe it to your fan base to explain why. Now, the funny thing, remember the old sort of joke for a long time was about, like, we would use the Pirates and the Royals as examples of these small market teams that would be a bedrock for young players to come up, play for them only to move on to free agency. But the reality is you go back 10 years and the Pirates were in the playoffs. And if you go back less than 10 years, the Royals won a World Series, played in a World Series, lost to the Giants and won a World Series against the Mets. Tampa Bay was just in a World Series. I think it's too broad of a statement to say that baseball is a game of the haves and the have-nots. Yes, it is much easier for the Dodgers to win 111 games when you are picking up the payroll, when you're getting large, big players and giving them big contracts. Padres are trying that as well. They are locking in guys on huge contracts in the hopes that they turn into a consistent postseason juggernaut. But the Rays have been relatively successful for a while, and they've done it without a fan base that is strong, a city that doesn't seem to care much about them. They don't play in a very good or attractive stadium in terms of, the aesthetics being part of the deal, right? I mean, some people play in stadiums that are nice enough that even if the team is middle of the road, just going to the ballpark is a cool experience. Well, Tropicana Field is not like that at all. It is not all that all. It's one of the worst stadiums. It's one of the worst stadiums in Major League Baseball. I've been there probably 10 times.
Did you go professional sports?
Huh?
Like one of the worst stadiums in professional sports?
Yeah, I never found it appealing. Again, my in-laws live miles away from Tropicana Field. So we've gone to plenty of games down there. I'm not impressed. I mean, again, I grew up going to Fenway Park, but I'm not impressed with it.
It's an old stadium. I mean, it looks like, the Astrodome back in its day.
It used to be the home of the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just the Thunderdome. It was just this dome that was sitting there. And the Tampa Bay Lightning used it until they built their arena across the bay. And then it was a place where it was attractive enough that, like, the Giants worked out a deal to get their stadium in San Francisco, threatening to move there back in the 90s. And it was one of those places where move to Tampa Bay.
I feel like the Rays can't do that because I feel like we're going to take our team to Nashville, Tampa Bay be like, all right.
Yeah, go ahead.
They literally have no leverage. I mean, they put year after year after year, they put together an incredible team. We talked about them yesterday. And fans are like, okay.
Yeah. They're just bringing in 15, 13,000 people.
I mean,
it's still early enough in the season that place should be really growing with fans.
I mean, you could probably put them in a high school stadium at this point, and fans would be like, yeah, that's fine. Make sure the dimensions are okay.
They're not pulling in that sort of. Look, and I don't blame areas for not being baseball towns. Not every place can be St. Louis. You know, I mean, football rules a lot of areas, and even places where you have successful baseball teams, where the Rangers might do well or the Atlanta Braves do well, there's still always like a concern about attendance. But nevertheless, Tampa Bay has never shown that the city enthusiasm for them. And they're 10-0. And again, when you're 10-0, you've reached a point where you've got things so dialed in that if you separate yourself in April, here's the thing. We know, again, it's a long season. But imagine if they finish the month, how many of their games they play. But let's say they finish the month with 3 losses, right? Or 4 losses. Like, that's a great leaping point to head into May and June. Like, it's a great head start into the season. So that's what I take out of the 10-0. Nobody thinks they're going to go 162-0. That's silly. Or they're not or lose 25 games.
Wait, what?
162
they're going to go 162-0. Come on.
But it is historic. I mean, it is pretty historic that this is a 10-0 start. It's pretty wild. And so, again, we've seen teams with lower payrolls, and in fact, at least some of the lower payroll teams have success finding the right connection. And the Tampa Bay Rays have been that team. They don't do it with flashy stars. They don't do it with big signings. They do it with a farm system. And again, when these guys are up for free agency, they go somewhere else. But there's always somebody that comes up behind them. And that's a real testament. That is using the tools that you have, right? It's not necessarily money ball like Oakland, but it is a way of saying what we do is we go after talent and we just keep replacing good talent. And we try to keep some players as long as we possibly can. But in the end, it's what we are. We're just not going to pay like the Yankees or the Mets or the Dodgers or the Padres or anybody like that. We're just not going to do it. But they can hit the ball. They've got good pitching. I mean, they've got Shane McClanahan, their ace tonight against the Red Sox. I mean, they could go 11-0 to start the season. So in 10 of their games this year, they've only trailed twice in the game. They've only trailed twice in their 10 games. And this is pretty historic. This is pretty wild. Is it now? Are they benefiting from the pitch clock? I don't know. Like, are they benefiting from the extra bases, larger bases? I don't know. Are they benefiting from no shift? I don't know.
That, you know, one thing, though, they haven't benefited from Ghost Runners yet.
Right, right.
That's
exactly.
The only thing we can't determine that.
We can determine that. They have not benefited from the extra inning rule. Exactly. So, you know, but also, too, let's not forget, too, that they haven't played everybody. Right? It's not like 10 games in the NFL where you've gotten a really large sample size.
No,
what's
of course
10
not.
Games in Major League Baseball? Three series?
60.
That's it, right? That's three teams, right? And that's about it. So, yeah, that's all they've got. You know, they haven't really beaten the creme de la creme. They've beaten the Tigers, the Nationals, and the A's. That's it. So they haven't played the Yankees. They haven't played the Mets. They haven't played the Dodgers. They haven't played the Braves. Like, they haven't played Milwaukee and St. Louis. They haven't played those teams. They're playing teams that are pretty much going to be at the bottom and stay at the bottom for a little bit. So, but still, but you know what? I don't want to diminish that because I don't want to act like the Rays being 10-0 is a massive, huge surprise with an explanation. This is a very good baseball organization. I mean, they were in the playoffs last year. They went to the World Series a couple of years ago. They've been a team in the postseason that has been a problem for a team like the Yankees, been problems for teams before. They've given some of the teams that have gone on to win the World Series or go to the World Series hell in the postseason. So they're a team that gets that wins enough games, wins around 100 games a year, is in the postseason, plays well in the postseason, and if they don't win the series, makes it really nervous for you. So congratulations that they are now 10-0, and tonight, again, their ace will be on the mound against the Red Sox in the second game of their series. Good, the Bad, and the Dumb is coming up next. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
Wake Up Call continues now on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, good, the bad, and the dumb on your Tuesday. Glad you can be with us here on SportsMap Radio. We do give you the good, the bad, and the dumb, but we start off with the good of the day.
I couldn't decide which way I wanted to go with the good of the day, so I'm going to let you decide because one could be saved for the following day.
Okay.
And so, you know, my question to you is, Tony, would you rather talk soccer or golf?
Doesn't matter.
All right, let's go golf.
All right.
And that is that Zach Ertz might be as deserving of a green jacket as much as John Rahm was.
Yeah, explain this because they are like buddies.
They are friends. They are buddies. There's even a group text between them, and I think J.J. Watt might be on this group text as well. It's called Birdies and Babies. But Zach Ertz wished John Rahm some good luck prior to him teeing off to start on Thursday, saying something to the effect that hole one looks great. It's all yours, buddy. And then we all know what John Rahm did on that first hole.
Oh, yeah. He threw a four-putted. I miss, I make.
Yeah. But you know, now they're spinning it. Zach is spinning it. JJ is even spinning it. That, you know what? That was probably all the motivation John needed to get him going.
Yeah, good job. Good job, yeah.
I kind of like it. I don't know about, sharing text threads, but, you know, I like it.
Yeah, good job. And do we know how they're friends? Are they just friends?
I'm not sure. I mean, I know Zach, he didn't go to Arizona State, right?
I don't know.
Maybe he played in Arizona last year, so maybe they just happened to run into the same circles and, you know, ended up on the golf course with each other at some point.
Maybe so.
Maybe it was a pro-am and they just hit it off and like, hey, you're in Arizona, I'm in Arizona, let's be Arizona buddies. That's the only thing I can think of.
Yeah, that's probably it. All right, so we going to go with soccer good?
No, I'll save that for tomorrow.
Oh, save that tomorrow? Okay. Yeah.
Or maybe for the next
one. I know you're soccer good, by
you
the way.
You do? Let's see. Let's put the Nostradamus hat on.
All right. I think it has something to do with Wrexham winning their game.
It does have something to do with Wrexham.
They are going to be one game away or something from promotion.
Well, they're still
EPL or whatever it is.
Well, not that far up the ladder, but they are four games away. If you don't know Wrexham, I mean, it's the adoptive team of Wake Up Call because why not? We need a team. And That's the team that's owned by Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney. And, yeah, they are one step closer. They fended off their top competitor this past weekend and were able to snatch a victory away 3-2 from Knotts County FC.
That's right.
This puts them now in the driver's seat alone, top of the table in the National League, trying to get that promotion into Division II, which means huge TV rights.
Yep. So good job, Rob McElhenney and
Ryan Reynolds
for buying this team and taking them out of the drudgery of a crappy stadium and rebuilding the stadium and putting a new pitch on the field and putting in players and good cup managers and putting your money into this thing because it's been paying off.
No, and they did this with, the way it happened was, you know, there was a back and forth game. They were up, you know, they were down 1-0, then they were up 2-1, then it was 2-2, then they went up 3-2, and then there was a penalty kick late in the game that Wrexham keeper Ben Foster, who was the former English national keeper.
Oh, not the actor that was in the Messenger? And
just, no, that's Ben.
The wrong Ben Foster.
Wrong Ben Foster. But Ben Foster, here you go, is 40 years old.
All right.
So he's still living his glory days and was able to save a penalty kick late in the game to preserve the win.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, one step closer.
Awesome. All right, what's the bad of the day?
I don't know if this is really bad.
Okay.
But you'll understand where I'm going with this, and that's the Pac-12 is in negotiations for a new TV rights deal.
Yeah, I've been trying to follow this story. It's a little layered.
Yeah, but I'm not saying this is bad, so please, you know, CW, don't get mad at me, but there's serious consideration for coming from the CW.
Yeah.
I mean, the CW is trying to change its image. It's trying to get more into live sports. Obviously, you know, as Jim Nantz eloquently pointed out, that they are the sponsor of LIV Golf. So I guess where the bad kind of lies, I mean, is this like a huge step down for the Pac-12?
Yeah, it can be. You're right. This is not a knock on the CW. CW, do whatever you want to do to become, you know, to become the
fifth network, right?
Exactly. It's like, you ever seen Ballers, that HBO show with The Rock? Remember he bought a TV network and he was trying to get the Pac-12 on it?
Right.
Because that's where you really are making some money. I mean, live TV is the only thing, live sports is the only thing on TV that people make appointments to be in front of their TV to watch. Everything else you can stream, everything you can watch at your leisure, you can fast forward through commercials. But sports, people tend to be at their television during the time it's on. They don't DVR sports. It's very, very low. They monitor this. They know what people are DVRing and they know what they're not DVRing. And sports is very low on the
I couldn't even tell you the last time I watched a TV program in real time.
Yeah, exactly. I'm with you. I don't because I'd rather just do other things and then catch them all and binge watch a bunch of episodes and whatnot. And most shows I watch are not serial, meaning like the ones I do that are on streaming services are, but like if I watch a sitcom, it's not serial to me. It's meaning I can watch three or four of them in one sitting.
Right.
So I can wait a month and then bang out a couple of them because I'm not like, oh my God, what's going to happen next week?
Yeah. Stay tuned.
But yeah, I'm a little.
But see,
the Pac-12, yeah. I mean, if it's not at like one of the major networks, one of the major sports networks, yikes.
Well, not only that, but I look at it in a bad this way, is that, you know, I don't really know any of the other suitors the Pac-12 are having to fish through. But I mean, I couldn't imagine the gobs of money the Big Ten, SEC, I mean, would be thrown at them.
Right.
Big 12.
Yeah.
And, you know, if they were sitting out there and going, you know what, you know, we need a new TV deal. Let's go find one. I mean, we heard about the Big Ten. It was billions of dollars being thrown at them.
I can't believe that there isn't a lawyer out there that couldn't find something to sue USC and UCLA over to keep them in the Pac-12. Like we go to lawsuits for all sorts of crazy, dumb things. I can't imagine there isn't a lawyer going through those agreements with a fine-tooth comb trying to keep that L.A. market intact for the Pac-12. That's the problem, is losing that market. It's just devastating to that conference. Devastating in terms of these rights deals, but yeah, you're right. It's a little layered story, and it's probably going to be sorting itself out. But you're right with CW. It's not.
This seems like a huge step back.
It does. All right, what's the dumb of the day?
The dumb of the day is I actually brought this up back in October, this next story, and it has now been confirmed.
All right.
You ready for it?
Backtrack in time, yes.
Your friend, your hero, Tony.
Yes.
Billy McFarland.
Yes, my man.
He sent a tweet out over the weekend. Fire Festival 2 is finally happening.
Awesome.
Tell me why you should be invited.
Awesome. 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 This guy just, he's, people made this prediction about him. People made this prediction about him. When he was going to jail, they said when he gets out of jail, he's going to come up with something and he will convince people to be a part of it.
Yep.
He is, he's like a hypnotist. Right? Or what was the word?
Mentalist.
Bengali? Is that what it was? Julia Louis-Dreyfus's Elaine said she had that she was dating that guy that said, oh, God, I'm losing my train of thought. Nevertheless, he can just make people do things. He just can make people do things. I guarantee you there are people like, yeah, we'll get him. Yeah. What do you need? I'm going to need a sound stage. I'm going to need concessions. Yeah, no problem. In fact, would you rather have us pay for the whole thing and then you just pay us back? Yeah, let's do it that way. Okay, good. We'll just put up all the upfront cost and then we'll just at the end, we'll just settle up. Yeah, let's do it that way. Yeah, exactly. That's exactly how this guy works. No one will learn their lesson. And you know what? Anybody that loses money on Fire 2, I don't want to hear you crying on a documentary.
No.
I'm sorry, the first one...
Oh, he said this time it was going to work, Tony.
Yeah, the first one, the caterer down in the Bahamas, I'm glad she made like five times what she put out. All the people who gave her money through GoFundMe. I'm for that. The next caterer, I don't care who you are, the next one that caters Fire 2 and you're crying on the documentary that Billy McFarland didn't pay you, I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear it
because you know it's coming.
Yeah, I don't want to hear it from
employees. I guess you know it's not coming.
Like I worked 20 hours a day. He didn't pay me. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it. You have three documentaries on the first disaster of Fyre Festival. I don't want to hear you crying on TV that you didn't get your money. I'm sorry. Like you learn your lesson, people.
No, this is literally if at first you don't succeed, try again.
Exactly.
He's gonna try.
It's like being part of a Ponzi scheme, right? Everyone's I just keep making money. Whether the market goes up or the market goes down, there's always money in my account.
Now, who in his camp is selling this on him, too?
I know, right? That's great.
It's like, hey, man, you know what? You know what you did wrong that first time? This and this. Just correct that. It'll be a huge success.
Just correct these two things, and you can get your Fyre Festival.
It'll be the new Woodstock, guaranteed.
Didn't 130,000 other things go? Don't worry about it. Just fix two things. You're good.
You're good. Make sure it's not just cheese and bread sandwiches.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Throw some meat in there.
Instead of tents, actually maybe build a villa. I don't know. That's awesome. You know what? I'm going to follow this like a detective. Wake up call.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, continuing along on Sports Map Radio. Good Tuesday to you. On Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. NBA play-in games tonight. Lakers and the Minnesota Timberwolves. Not a really good one. Rudy Gobert not going to play tonight for Minnesota. Suspended after he punched Kyle Anderson. Said, they were in a team huddle in Sunday's game. And, yeah, he threw a punch. Got the best of him. Jaden McDaniel punched a wall. He's hurt. So he's out. But the Lakers are playing really good basketball. They've won 9 of their last 11. A win would put them in the 7 seed, and they would automatically advance to face the Memphis Grizzlies in round number 1. But the team that loses tonight plays the winner of the game tomorrow night between New Orleans and Oklahoma City. Same thing in the East. The Miami Heat and the Atlanta Hawks are playing tonight. Winner becomes the 2 seed that will get the Celtics. The loser of that game will face either the Chicago Bulls or the Toronto Raptors on Friday to determine the 8 seed, and that winner gets Milwaukee. So that's how the play-in tournament works. Social media it's got a lot of great stuff to it. It's got a lot of bad stuff to it. It's definitely changed the world in a way that's, you know, it's how we get news, how we process news, what's breaking, what's true, all of that. It's changed. The social media has changed, and we've known that because we've now seen a number of times where reporters being rushed to be the first have gotten things wrong. And instead of being able to process something and get the details and then put it out for, let's say, the morning paper, so you would find out Your local team, you know, let's say a reporter got a hint that the local basketball team was in the process of making a trade. You'd get all the details. You find out, okay, what are they getting in return? Has it been finalized? It goes to the league. And then when you get all that information, you print it, and then everybody would wake up the next morning and see it. And now, of course, we got Twitter, and these guys are rushing to the Celtics are trading so-and-so to the Atlanta Hawks or so-and-so, right? They're rushing to that. But also social media can do some really good things. For example, you might find out about a story. Like we were just talking about that Fire Festival, right? And we know Billy McFarland stiffed a lot of people in that first Fire Festival that he was trying to throw, including this catering woman who put a lot of money out making food for the crew and everything that she had gotten a contract. And she was really excited because it was going to change her business. And he stiffed her on a lot of money, and she took her life savings and whatnot. But because of social media there and the documentary, she had a GoFundMe page, or they started a GoFundMe page for her, and it got flooded, and she made a lot of money back. She made even more money than she lost back. Because social media can sometimes be good. We see things like a video on Twitter of a kid being bullied in school, right? And next thing you know, a famous football player is stepping up going, I'm going to go to that school. That's in my town. I'm going to go to that school, and I'm going to find that kid, and I'm going to support him, and I'm going to have lunch with them. And you see these kind of stories all the time. Those are good, feel-good stories. But you know what? It also can be a little creepy. And I'll tell you that from this story. So at the Masters over the weekend, there the 16th hole, Brooks Koepka was standing, and behind him was a young lady wearing a 2023 Masters hat. And she's a young lady, 20-something-year-old girl, and she's kind of attractive. And so naturally, people on TV looked at that and went, I wonder who that is. Well, they didn't have to go very far to find out who she was. Because the mother of that daughter posted that my daughter was on TV. And they also had another shot of her and her dad on TV. And people just did their internet digging, and they found out that, yeah, she's a cheerleader at Texas Tech. There you go, folks. That's how social media can work. And the next thing you know, social media's got pictures of her in her Tech cheerleading outfit and her dancer outfit and everything. So it's wild how people can watch something, a live sporting event, and go, I'm in love with that young lady in the stands or in the grounds or whoever. Just a quick shot. And next thing you know, the world sort of goes, we've got to find out who that is. You didn't have to do it. We didn't have to go very far in the past to find out another example of that. Utah State, when they lost their opening round game of the NCAA tournament. The cheerleader was crying. We seem to be attracted to cheerleaders who cry. And some people wanted to know, who was she? Exactly who she was. Found out she was a young, again, cheerleader, and she was dating one of the Utah State basketball players. Everybody knew her background with very short amount of time. Now, that didn't take a lot of investigating, because you could just simply go to the website of the school, and you could find out, hey, look at the cheerleaders. Bam, that looks like her. Boom, that's who it is. This one took a little bit more detective work, but nevertheless, they found out who she was. So the moral of the story is, if you want your 15 minutes of fame, as Andy Warhol projected, and you're an attractive young college student, you can just find your way to the cameras of a sporting event, and eventually people will find out who you are, and they'll start talking about you in a positive way. You only get about 15 minutes, because we do forget about these people, and they quickly disappear onto the next detective case. But the reality of it is that you get a chance to become famous for a bit, even more famous than being a Texas Tech cheerleader. All you have to do is wear a cute hat behind Brooks Koepka and have a big smile, have the world fall in love with you, and before you know it, you're all over the place.
You're the new sensation.
You're the new sensation. So it works. It really does work.
You know, sticking to the Masters, did you see the numbers for it?
No. Were they good?
Yeah.
I assume they were really good.
Yeah, they actually, I got to find it again because I lost my way. But Darren Rovell had tweeted it out. Or actually, Kyle Koster tweeted out that it was the most watched on any network in 5 years, averaging 12.058 million viewers.
Wow.
So not too shabby. But what Darren Rovell said on top of that, it kind of makes me think.
Which was take out the live guys, and you have John Rahm with a 5-shot win over Spieth and Henley. Do you even sniff those numbers then?
Right, exactly. Mark Casarano, again, of the New York Post, who we've had on this show, he had a column today that says, you know what? This live PGA Tour thing is actually pretty good for fans.
Yeah.
Like, and that's, he's like, this is like, this added a lot of drama to the Masters that may not have been up front and center by CBS. Like, CBS didn't force it. They didn't have cool live versus tour graphics. But if you're kind of following golf, you knew it. You didn't have anybody. You didn't need anybody to remind you of it. You kind of knew it. And it added a lot of, it added a flavor to the Masters that I think that people are like, you know what? This isn't bad. You know what? This is actually pretty cool. And I have to admit, I think it had everything to do with what Norman said and Joaquin Neiman had said. I'm sorry, I was thinking Gladiator for a second and Joker. Joaquin Neiman had said, which was, Neiman had said, they hate us and we could win. And Norman was saying how everybody was going to celebrate. I actually was kind of wondering that going into the final round. I was like, Brooks Koepka got a 2-shot lead. I know I'm going to watch the Masters anyway, but if he wins this thing, are they all going to be celebrating on the green? Like, seriously? And this was before Mickelson made his charge or anything, or Patrick Reed made his charge. I was thinking, are they all going to do that? Really? I wonder if they are. And I was curious to see how it would play out if a live golfer had won. And you know what's funny to me? I've said this before. I think the live golf story was one of my bigger stories of 2022, just because I like golf. I like the sport, and I follow the sport. But I thought we don't usually have the NFL breaking up. We don't have major NBA breaking up. We actually saw one of the top sports entities on the landscape break up, and we don't normally get that. But I don't have a dog in the fight. I like golfers on LIV. I like golfers on the PGA Tour. I don't really like LIV in terms of its business model, but I don't have a problem with the golfers on it. Like, I don't hate Dustin Johnson because he plays LIV. I've been a Phil Mickelson fan for a long time. I don't dislike Phil because he's on LIV. But I was like, I don't have a dog in this fight, but this is actually kind of fun. Like, I find myself pulling more for the PGA Tour guys than the live guys.
See, I was opposite.
I was
wanting to see what would happen if,
me too,
you know, if live guys won it. I mean, if Brooks Koepka won it, or if, you know, like Phil had an amazing round, if all of a sudden, you know, the poster child for everything that was terrible for live or terrible about live, Phil Mickelson, if he was to win the Masters.
Seriously, what would live have done? Like, how would they have come out today if they had won the Masters, if one of their golfers had won the Masters, if Brooks Koepka pulled it off, or Patrick Reed or Phil Mickelson pulled it off? Like, what would we be hearing today about them? And here's the fun thing. The PGA Championship is next month. They might pull it off there. They might pull it off at the U.S. Open. They might pull it off at the British Open. Like, they've got golfers who are playing really well right now to a point where, yeah, they might pull it off. When they do win a major, what are they like? It wouldn't be a screw you to any of the entities running the majors. The screw you, like the USGA is like, nope, if you qualify for the US Open, I don't care where you play. British Open and RNA, they're like, we don't care. PGA, we don't care. The PGA and the PGA Tour are not the same thing. It would be if a LIV golfer won the Players' Championship, what they're not going to do, but it would be if they had done that. That's so they're not sticking their nose up at the entities that invited them to participate in the tournaments in the first place. They're doing it in an in your face to everybody on the PGA Tour that had some harsh words for their league. But you're right. I think Cannizzaro is right. I think it adds flavor.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. As we continue hour two, hour three, we'll talk some NBA. We got a bunch of kind of things to dissect when it comes to the playoffs and all of that. Steve Ashburner is going to join us from NBA.com. That's coming up at the bottom of the hour in hour three, and we'll talk NBA with him. We see them every day, people driving using their phones. There's the sneak a peeker or the fast scroller, who can quickly become the fender benderer that got a ticketer for the driver who killed someone. Pay attention or pay the price. You drive, you text, you pay. Paid for by NHTSA. All right, so there is some news on the NFL Sunday Ticket front if you're interested. If you are a non... Okay, so we know that YouTube has taken over the NFL Sunday Ticket from DirecTV. So if you don't have DirecTV and you've always wanted the Sunday Ticket, you can get it from now YouTube. So here's how it's going to work. If you are a subscriber to YouTube TV, you can get the NFL Sunday Ticket for $249 if you buy it before June 6th. So basically, if you give them money 3 months before the season starts, you can get it for about $250. It's going to be $349 for the season if at any point that you want it. If you want to bundle it with the Red Zone channel, it's going to be $389, and $289 if it's early. If you're a non-YouTube subscriber, so you just want to get it, but you have a cable, and you can still get it. You can still get it on YouTube TV, which is revolutionary when you think about it. Remember how many people wanted DirecTV for the Sunday Ticket, but they needed, like, their apartment wasn't in the right place and everything like that. They couldn't get it, so they had to get the one that was online. You had to prove that you couldn't get DirecTV service. So let's say you were in an apartment that didn't have, what, a south-facing window for the satellite. You could then get it online, but if you had a home that could get the satellite, you had to subscribe to DirecTV in order to get it. You couldn't just buy the online package. So if you're a non-YouTube TV subscriber, meaning you have cable but you still want this, it's going to cost you $449 for the season, or if you want to bundle it with Red Zone, $489. You can get it for $349 early if you're a non-subscriber. I think NFL Sunday Ticket is one of the most brilliant things I've seen a sports entity do ever. I thought it was so fascinating when they put it together. I've had it throughout the years a number of times when I've had DirecTV. Sometimes I haven't had DirecTV. Sometimes I had. And it's amazing. It depends on, though. One of the reasons that people obviously like it is because people move outside of the market of which their team is in. You might grow up a Patriots fan, but now you live in Arizona. You might grow up a Seattle Seahawks fan, but now you live in Atlanta, right? So it's great that you can get all the games. But it also is cool because sometimes, as you know, depending on where you live, you get locked into those crappy games at the late afternoon games. Here I am, I live in Nashville, and sometimes I get a game in my market at 3 o'clock that is just ugh. When the real game that I want is getting, like, you know, 70% coverage around the country, but it's not in my location. Now, obviously, with the Sunday Ticket, you can watch it. So we'll see where this goes. The DirecTV had it for 28 years, which is a really long time. That is a long time. But I always thought it was brilliant. I mean, I always thought it was brilliant. I do not understand how the, you know, NBA's got the league pass, obviously. NHL's got the same thing and whatnot. You can get these now.
But MLB extra innings.
Any extra innings, yeah. Have they created a way to say, like, if you're a Celtics fan, look, I live in Nashville and I want to see just the Celtics games. No. I don't want the league pass. I don't care about the the Memphis. Listen to me. I'm all over the place today. The
Vancouver
Grizzlies. And the Memphis Grizzlies, I don't care about the Memphis Grizzlies, or I don't care about the Sacramento Kings. I just want to watch Celtics games. That's the only thing I want to watch. I don't want to buy a huge package just to watch the Celtics games.
Yeah, I really do think it's all or nothing.
Yeah, it is all. Yeah.
And then in baseball terms, you know, you can buy the MLB package, but if you live in an area that's close, you know, like what we found out was what? If you're in a 500-mile radius of that team, you don't get to see it?
You don't get to see it. Now, my thing is anybody done the analysis of that? Where somebody goes up to the NBA, let's say, and goes, look, you can sell this NBA league pass for X amount of dollars, gives everybody the games, okay? And the diehard Celtics fans is like, screw it, I'll just take the Celtics. He's going to buy that. And he'll get all the games he doesn't want, but he'll buy it for the Celtics. Here's the thing, though. We've done market research, and we figure out that if you broke that off, and instead of like $400 for the season, you charge him $100 for Celtics games, you'll and $100 team based only,
you'll increase this share at a little bit at a time more than you would if everybody bought the big pot.
All right. So I just looked. I mean, I don't know if this is along what you're saying, but MLB.TV.
Okay.
Okay. Which is MLB Extra Innings. Does offer two primary subscription plans.
Okay.
Okay. For all teams, $149.99 a year.
That's nothing. I should get that.
For a single team, $129.99 a year.
Oh, so that's not that much different.
No, you're saving $20. You can either just, okay. You know, like for me, it's like if I want to watch the Dodgers, I can do the single plan or spend $20 extra and go and get everybody.
You'd rather just get everybody.
Yeah.
Because maybe you want, maybe you are interested in the Cardinals Brewers matchup in July for whatever reason. See, isn't it safe to say that the NFL has the one thing that the other leagues don't have, and that is national appeal, no matter what game is being played?
Yes.
Like that. That's
no, it's like what you just said. Why would I want to watch Brewers Cubs?
Right.
I have no interest in it.
On a Tuesday in June.
Maybe later in the season, if they're both battling for a playoff spot, yeah, sure, you know, sign me up. I might have a vested interest in Yankees Red Sox just given the history, but the Red Sox haven't been that good the last couple of years, so it's really, you know, that's not something I would turn to.
And there are a few NBA regular season games where you're like, hey, you know what, that actually looks really good. I think I want to see Kevin Durant's debut with the Suns.
Of course.
You might want to do that, but most of the NBA is hyper-local as well.
But give me a generic Jaguars-Jets game on a Sunday, I'll probably watch it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, I'll watch it on a Thursday. I'll watch it on a Monday. Why wouldn't I watch it on a Sunday?
I watch whatever. I'll either watch Red Zone or whatever the heck I get my local team. Like, if the Tennessee Titans play on a Thursday night and it's just blanket, here's some games on Sunday, I'll just watch whatever that is. I don't care who it is, what it is. I get the Titans, of course, like you get the Texans. But whatever else they're throwing on my TV, I put it on, and or I'll watch Red Zone. But if I have the ticket, I'll watch the Steelers. But I'll also check that screen that gives you all the games, because I'm really interested in how all the other games are playing out. I am interested in the Giants-Cowboys game. I'm interested in the Patriots-Dolphins.
Yeah.
I'm interested in the Raiders-Chargers. Yeah, heck yeah,
and
I think
a lot of that appeal stems from fantasy football.
Fantasy football, yeah.
Because
you can throw gambling in there, but it's mostly fantasy football.
Yeah, but it's mainly fantasy because you know, the rule of thumb is like, don't pick everyone from your favorite team, obviously.
Right. Yeah.
You know, as much as you try to do fantasy baseball or fantasy basketball, I know you and I both have done it in the past. Baseball is just too hard.
Yeah,
baseball is just, I mean, every single day, I got to make sure my starting pitcher's in. You know, I left good starting pitching on the bat. You just can't keep up with it. Basketball, maybe a little bit, but, you know, it gets too confusing at times as well. Football is just plain and simple. It's like, boom, here you go.
I had this great, my wife got me this when we first were married. I think it was like our first anniversary. She got me this Motorola pager that was not just, it wasn't a pager. It was like a baseball score thing. This is again before smartphones, and you would just hit it and it would show you all the games. And it was all like old digital stuff. Like it was all that black and gray digital thing, but it would show you every game and it would show you who, like how many base runners were on, what the inning was, what the score was. It was really cool. I mean, it was really cool. You could just flip through it and see all the games that were going on at that particular time and get updates on every game. It was phenomenal. Obviously became obsolete as we got more smartphones and whatnot. But it was my early, like, catching up with everything, being part of it. The NFL is, I think the Sunday ticket was absolutely brilliant. I mean, absolutely brilliant. Because that's a league that knows what it is, right? That's a league that knows where it is and what it is and realized, oh, there's money to be made here. There's money to be made here on this type of thing. Who wants it? And DirecTV for close to 30 years, that's incredible, for close to 30 years was the one that kept going, and we will get it, and we will get it. Because to them, it was the main draw of why you would get satellite television. They have not figured out the weather thing. You know, like they try to tell you, oh, no, it gets stronger and stronger. But everyone's got satellite TV, knows that when the weather goes, so does your satellite TV. But the one selling thing that they had constantly was the ability to see any NFL game you wanted at any time. And now that's going on to YouTube. But still a brilliant, brilliant marketing tool.